Well, good morning, folks. This is Ed Lopez, and I am joined today by my good friend and colleague, Ray Sabula, along with another good friend and a wonderful employee at the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities, Nicole Souto. And today's session is the first of two sessions on overpayments. During today's session, Ray and I will be doing what I call the A to Z of overpayments, giving you all the basics about overpayments. When do you see an overpayment? What do you do if you get an overpayment notice? Do you request a reconsideration or do you request a waiver? You'll learn about those two concepts, reconsideration and waiver. You will learn about ways to just get rid of an overpayment very quickly, called administrative waivers. So it's going to be a very exciting day. And then next week, next Tuesday, same time, same channel, at 10 a.m. here, Ray and I are going to take you through the waiver of overpayment form. We will actually go through each and every question and talk to you about the importance of the question, how to best answer the question depending on the kind of overpayment that the individual that you are working with has. The key there is that we all know that you can complete a form, but if you don't use the key language, there's a very good chance that you will not have an overpayment waived. So we will teach you that next week. So at this point, let me introduce you to Nicole Souto. Nicole works with the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities. She is the person who spurred these six webinars. She is the individual whose vision it was to make sure that individuals with developmental disabilities and the families of individuals with developmental disabilities got a chance to see these important issues and got a chance to be trained on these important issues. So Nicole, take it away.
Thanks, Ed. I'm so glad to be here for our fifth webinar series. And that you're right, I just felt it was so important that people get this information so that they can start using these powerful tools to get working and be able to access the benefits they need even though they are working. So I really appreciate our collaboration with Cornell because they really are the top-notch experts on benefits issues. So we're very lucky to be having this partnership and sharing this information with you. As Edwin said, my name is Nicole Souto and I work with the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, and I'd like to welcome you all to our benefits webinar. Today is the fifth webinar in our series, and it will discuss how to deal with overpayments. So the most important thing I would say for you to remember is if this happens to you or someone you're working with, there are things that can be done to help you get through it. And so we really hope that this webinar teaches you the process and will assist you with what steps you take next to resolve the overpayment situation. And I can't help but endorse the New York Makes Work Pay hotline because I feel like if you get this information and you're still struggling, you should know that there's people there that can help you get connected to the people who can get you through whatever problems you're having. So that hotline is 1-888-224-3272, and you can find that information also on the NewYorkMakesWorkPay.org website, which has a lot of other information that's very useful. So please make use of these resources because they're there to help you understand how to use benefits and work incentives to be self-sufficient and make the most of living in the community. So that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Ed and Ray and we'll jump right into overpayments.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Nicole. And just think, Nicole, we started talking about this program about 6 months ago, and now 6 months later, we've done 5 out of 6 so far. It's very exciting, just absolutely very exciting. So let's get started here. And as usual, every time we do one of these sessions, we make sure that you understand what is on your computer when you are listening in. So you'll notice that on the right-hand side of your computer, when you're on the GoToWebinar platform, there is a control panel. And on that control panel, there is an audio icon. There are many icons, but one of them is audio. And some of you will be listening by using your mic and speakers on the computer. And so simple, you go to the audio mode and you click on use mic and speakers and you can listen to us talk. If you are having problems with the mic and speakers, or if it's not possible for you to use the mic and speakers, you can use the telephone to listen to us. And what happens is you go to that audio panel, you click on that icon, and you click on the use telephone. Up will pop up a dial-in number, an access code, and an audio PIN. Your very own, not the one that's there. But then you can dial it, plug in the access code, throw in the PIN, and you will be able to listen to the dulcet tones of Ed Lopez and Ray Sabula. So simple as that. We always want your participation during these webinars. We know that we are covering very complex material. We know that you may have questions about it, and we want to encourage you to ask those questions, because it has always been my feeling that if one of you has a question, that means that probably 10 of you have the question. So let's ask that question when we have it. If we see the question right away and we see that it's on point, we will answer it right away. If, however, it's something we're going to cover down the line, we'll answer it down the line. And if we were not to get to your question, which I really find unlikely, but if we were not to, we would then answer it for you in an email after the webinar. But how do you ask a question? You go to that control panel and you will see a tab that is labeled questions. You click on that tab and up will pop up what you see here, the bottom, questions. And so notice where that second arrow is? That's where you're going to write in your question and then click on send, and it will come to us. And as I said, we will either get to it right away or sometime down the line if we are going to answer those questions. The last thing I want to say before we get started with the session is that we will have 6 polling questions during this webinar. And the reason that we use polling questions is twofold. First, we want to make sure that if we are covering something that is very complex, that most people understood it. And sometimes by asking a polling question, if we only get a 50 or 45 or 52% correct rate, we know that we need to go back and explain it in a slightly different manner so that you understand the concept. So it helps us do a better job. Secondly, oftentimes I will use polling questions ahead of time to see how much people already know. So two purposes: to see how much you've gotten from the sessions, whether we're doing a good job ourselves or whether we need to explain something else, and secondly, to see how much people know already so that we know whether to cover it in too much detail or to do it a little bit quicker. Having said that, it is now time for us to get started. Overpayments. And let me tell you that overpayments are the scourge of individuals who are getting disability benefits. I can't tell you how often I get a phone call from an individual who will say to me, I just got a letter and it's an overpayment letter and I am going to quit my job. That's how it starts, because they are so frustrated with getting overpayments. So we're going to cover a lot of material today. We're going to talk to you about how some overpayments can actually be avoided from the beginning so that you don't have these kinds of calls coming to you, or so that you don't need to make this kind of a call yourself. So what is an overpayment? When does it happen? Well, it happens when a person gets more benefits, cash benefits, from the Social Security Administration than they were entitled to receive. So what that means is that the overpayment is the total amount that an individual received for any time period which exceeded what they should have received for that time period. And let me just give you a quick example. Remember when we discussed Social Security Disability Benefits, SSDI, Social Security Disability Insurance Benefits, and Ray and I explained to you that the SSDI program is an all or nothing program. Either you get an SSDI check or you don't get an SSDI check. And Ray and I spent a lot of time explaining to you that the substantial gainful activity rule back in 2011 was $1,000, and now in 2012 it is $1,010. We explained to you that after the trial work period and after the 3 months of grace period, if an individual earns above the substantial gainful activity, countable earning wise, they will be entitled to no SSDI check. But if they earn below, they will be entitled to a full SSDI check. And then we covered a lot of incentives that could be used to keep those earnings below the countable SGA level. We covered subsidies. We covered impairment-related work expenses, etc. So there was a lot we covered. Well, let me put it this way. If an individual were to have finished their trial work period and used up their grace period, and then in the next month, lo and behold, earn above the SGA level, they would not be entitled to a check. If they got that check anyway, that would be an overpayment for the entire check. So if they were getting $800 a month in an SSDI benefit, they would have an $800 overpayment. That's how it works. It's the total amount an individual received for any period which exceeded the amount which they should have been paid for that period. They should have been paid zero in that month, but they got their full $800 SSDI check. Now, overpayments occur in several ways. First, they occur in something called SSDI work-related cessations. In other words, the example that I just gave you, they should not have received the check in that month, but they got it anyway. And oftentimes, you know, that's what happens because Social Security is often working months behind where they should be. It also occurs in SSDI medical cessations. And this one is a little different because this one is not about work. It's about an individual getting a notice that says, we are doing a continuing disability review on your case. And they start the continuing disability review. And if they find that the individual's condition has improved and that they are no longer disabled, they go in and they say, oh, how long ago did we find that you were no longer disabled? And for every month thereafter, from the time that the person was no longer disabled, they will say the person was overpaid. Next, SSI excess resources. I know that Ray and I have told you on a number of occasions that the whopping resource limit for SSI purposes is $2,000. For those of you who know about Medicaid, you know that the Medicaid resource limit is $13,800. And if the person is on the Medicaid buy-in for working people with disabilities, the resource limit is $20,000. So we all know, that the SSI resource limit is woefully low. And it's not that hard sometimes for some of our consumers who are saving $5 or $10 a month to go over that resource limit. When they do, they are deemed to not be eligible for a benefit in that month. we will cover later the $50 leeway amount. And most people will not even hear about an overpayment notice if they're just $50 over the resource limit. But once they go past that, Social Security will then say, oh, guess what? You've been overpaid for this month and that month and the next month because you should not have gotten a check because you were over the resource limit. Finally, SSI excess earnings. This one is a very simple one. Remember when we did the SSI work incentives and Ray and I kept hammering into everybody here that the rule is as follows: 20, 65, half the remainder. The first $20 of unearned income is disregarded. If there is no unearned income, it gets carried over to earned income. And then the next $65 earned is disregarded. So if a person is only getting SSI and they earn $85 in a month, their SSI will not be affected at all. But if they're only getting SSI and they earn $185, the first $85 is disregarded. And then 50% of the remainder, 50% of 100 is 50. The SSI will be affected by $50. It will be decreased by $50. The consumer will still have more money in their pockets, but there will be a $50 overpayment if down the road. That's how it works, and that's how overpayments occur in the Social Security world. Now, let's look at overpayments that I always explain to any individual that I am working with, that we have to expect that if an individual that's getting either SSDI or SSI returns to work, at some point there may be an overpayment. At some point. And I always let individuals know that that is a possibility. And the reason I do that is because I don't want a person to come to me down the road and say, you told me I should go to work, but you never told me that I might be overpaid. And so it's important that people know that. And the reason there might be an overpayment is because Social Security works usually a couple of months behind reality. So in other words, for SSI, if my friend Ray Sabula were to work today and earn $585 in January, we all know that 585 take away 20, take away 65 is 500. You divide that by 2, that's $250. His SSI check should be reduced by $250. He's got a lot more money in pocket, but it should be reduced by $250. But it doesn't happen in January because Social Security works on something called a retrospective monthly accounting. It happens in March, 2 months after. So that's why I always say that in SSI cases, if an individual is going to go to work, and this is a big tip, if an individual is going to go to work and they're going to have a steady income, they should contact the Social Security office. Simple as that. Contact the Social Security office. And then they should say to the Social Security worker, listen, I am going to be going to work, and I am estimating that I will be earning X amount every month, and I would estimate a little high. Why do I do that? Because that guarantees that should I work an extra hour during the month, that I still don't have an overpayment. By doing it this way, it does two things for the client. The first one is that it guarantees that the individual gets a regular check each and every month. The check is not going up and down because of the earnings. Secondly, it guarantees that at the end of the year, when the Social Security worker does what they call their reconciliation, that in fact, instead of an overpayment, we have an underpayment because we've estimated a little high. Do you know what that does for individuals? It takes away so much of the anxiety. So every one of you who's on today's webinar should know that if it's an SSI case and the income seems to be pretty regular, the call should be made to SSA, and in fact, they should be asked to please estimate a wage and to estimate it a little high. That is a very important tip. Finally, individuals can use SSA's call-in system to report wages. In some places, it works very well. In other places, it doesn't work as well. And that's why I say to you, do the estimated wages, because that works much better. And at this point, Ray, it is time for us to get to our first overpayment. And this is one that I get questions about all the time, and though I have not covered it, I want to cover it now in a little detail. And here's what the question says. The question says, a rep payee can be held liable for an overpayment if the overpayment was their fault. True or false? A rep payee can be held liable for an overpayment if the overpayment was their fault. It's a question that we get, Ray. We must get it all the time, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And Ray, not only that, most people, when they call us about it, usually have the wrong answer. And so, in fact, as I look through our response rate right now, in this group, most people also have the wrong answer. So it's going to give people a chance to listen to your wonderful voice as you explain to them what the correct answer is. And with, you know, we've got a minute, and we've had 90% of you voted. That's absolutely
great.
Wonderful. I'm going to close the poll. I'm going to share the results. 75% of you said, absolutely true. A rep payee can be held liable for an overpayment if the overpayment was their fault. And 25% of you said false. And Ray, what's the answer and why?
Well, the answer is false.
Absolutely.
You know, and why that is a long, long story. But we need to understand that being a rep payee is not an easy job, that it brings a lot of responsibilities. And because of that, Social Security will only find fault with the rep payee and make them responsible if the rep payee has misused benefits. So that, and misuse means they have used it for somebody other than the beneficiary. So if I'm Ed's rep payee and I make sure he has a place to live, clothes, and food to eat, I have not misused the money. So if there's an overpayment, I am not responsible. However, if I am Ed's rep payee and I get his SSI check, and I go to Florida on vacation, I have misused the money. And in that limited situation, I would be responsible for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now everybody on this webinar knows that the rep payee is only responsible if they were to misuse the funds that they get for the individual. If they are using the funds correctly, the fact that there's an overpayment does not mean that the rep payee is going to be responsible. It will be the individual who is responsible, but it's going to be a lot easier for the individual to request a waiver of that overpayment if somebody else is doing the work. Right, Ray?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So let's move on here, going on to the big, what Ray and I always call the big debate. You've got an overpayment notice in front of you. And the question is, what do you do? Do you request reconsideration or do you request a waiver of the overpayment? And a lot of people do not understand what the difference is. So one of our jobs right now is to help you understand the differences, but to help us see whether people understand them already, we are going to do our second polling question. And here's the polling question: requesting a reconsideration of an overpayment is the same as requesting a waiver of an overpayment. True or false? And Ray, this time our voters that have already in 20 seconds, we have almost 80% of the vote in. As of now, and I almost hate to utter the word, are unanimous. I think you're much better at carrying a tune than I am, right?
Yes, I think so too.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, you know, it's hard to believe that we have a Puerto Rican with no rhythm here. But alas, it is true. So let me close the poll and let me share the results. 6% of you said true, it's the same. And 94% of you said false. And Ray, what is the answer?
I'm going to say 6%. No soup for you.
Okay.
94% of you are correct. And what the difference is, a reconsideration is telling Social Security that you don't believe the overpayment happened or that the amount is wrong. When you file a waiver, you're asking that you don't have to pay it back, but you are admitting that there was an overpayment and that the amount is correct. So these are two very distinct processes and two very important processes.
Absolutely, Ray. And in fact, what we're going to be doing now for the next 45 minutes is actually spending a lot of time covering those two concepts. Now, first, let's go to the reconsideration, which I'm going to cover, and then Ray will spend about 35 minutes on the waiver. Okay? And then next week, on Tuesday, we're going to spend a whole hour and a half on the waiver of the overpayment or change of repayment form. Okay? But here goes. When you say, I am going to request a reconsideration, what you're doing is you're challenging the fact that an overpayment exists. In other words, you say, overpayment? What overpayment? You never overpaid me. Or you're saying, $7,000 overpayment? No way. I was overpaid, but I was only overpaid $3,000. So you're either challenging that there was an overpayment in the first place, or you're challenging the amount of the overpayment. Okay? And when you challenge the amount of the overpayment and there's still an overpayment left there, then you can request a waiver for that amount. See how that works? With a reconsideration, you must file the request within 60 days of receipt of the notice, and Social Security always assumes that there is a 5-day mailing assumption. So in other words, that will then give you 65 days. But my friends, don't wait. If you know that there's a reason why there was no overpayment, or if you know that that overpayment amount is not correct, do it right away. Don't wait for those 60 days. Don't play games with the, you know, required appeals process. Now let me tell you, as we go through here, I want to make sure that you understand what happens in these cases. Because look at the first bullet on when you use reconsideration. It should be used to correct any errors in the amount of the overpayment assessed to a beneficiary. Like, for example, to apply impairment-related work expenses, subsidies, etc., and to correct wage information. Now let's look at that first statement there, to apply IRWIs or subsidies. You've got Social Security saying that Nicole Sudo was working and earning $1,080 a month in 2011. And thus, because she had already used up her trial work period and her grace period back in at the end of 2010, that Nicole Sudo, who was getting $1,000 a month all of 2011, was overpaid in each one of those months. So her overpayment is 1,000 times 12, $12,000. Now Nicole Sudo had impairment related work expenses, and she had notified Social Security about them a while back. And even if she had not notified them, it does not make a difference, because oftentimes individuals don't know about impairment related work expenses or subsidies until they talk to someone like me or any of you on the webinar right now. And so she comes up with a little over $200 in impairment related work expenses for medications and other items that she needed because of her impairment in order to work, and that she paid for out of pocket. And so Nicole says $1,100 take away $200 is $900. I was never over the SGA, Social Security worker. I was not overpaid. So I am requesting a reconsideration, and as part of that reconsideration, enclosed please find my IRWIS submissions. That overpayment should go away. And that's why we've put in the second bullet here, which says that SSA should be seen as a creditor at this point, and your efforts should be treated like any other effort to correct the bill you receive. If you get a wrong bill from your MasterCard, do you do nothing about it? Or do you get on the phone and call that 800 number and tell them that the bill was incorrect? You have to do the same thing with the Social Security Administration. Once an individual says, I am requesting a reconsideration, recoupment efforts have to stop right away. And they cannot reinstate the recoupment, and recoupment means that they're taking your money away from you, until SSA issues a decision. So always keep that in mind as you go through. Next, following that reconsideration, the challenge to the fact of and or amount of the overpayment will follow the standard administrative appeal. In other words, what that means is if you request a reconsideration and they say, no, we don't agree with you, then you have a right to appeal and go to a hearing in front of an administrative law judge. If you were to lose that part, you could go to a hearing at the Appeals Council. It's a paper review there, really. And if you lost there, you could go to federal court and file it. But I will tell you right now that many of our reconsideration of overpayment cases get resolved before they go to an administrative law judge, and most of them, if they don't get resolved at that stage, get resolved at the administrative law judge hearing stage. So that, my friends, in a nutshell, is a reconsideration and how to handle a reconsideration. And now my good friend Ray Sabula is going to cover waiver of recoupment of an overpayment.
Okay, Ed. Feel free to take a breath. What we're going to do?
Too much, am I?
And not at all. No. But what we're doing now is shifting gears, as we said, to a different procedure. Now, notice that Ed told you that a reconsideration has to be filed within 60 days. And he said that you can challenge the amount of the overpayment, just like you would a MasterCard bill or a gas bill or your electric bill. You can challenge the amount. So if we were working to reduce a $7,000 overpayment to $3,000, have we missed the time for a waiver? Not at all. Because there is no time limit for a waiver. when we're looking at the waiver, again, no time limit, and we are looking at asking Social Security to waive recoupment of something that we agree with. We agree that there is an overpayment, and we are satisfied that the amount is now correct, but we do not want to repay. And how do we do that? Ed, we have a polling question coming up.
Absolutely, and this is a polling question to test what you've heard so far and how much you already know. And that polling question is being launched here, and it reads as follows. Requesting a waiver of the overpayment admits you were overpaid, but that it wasn't your fault that you were overpaid. True or false? And Ray, this one is always one that's very, very, very interesting, because folks continue to confuse reconsideration and waiver all the time. And this
I wouldn't exactly call this a trick question, but I'd call it a tricky question.
Right, right, exactly. And it's there because we want to stress a point here. We really want to stress a point that there is a difference between reconsideration and waiver, and that waiver has very special meaning. When you request a waiver, there's a very special meaning to it.
Yep.
And we've got now 85% of the vote in.
Great participation. Great participation.
And in fact, this participation right now is a little lower than the last two questions that had 89% vote. But I'm going to close the poll and share the results with you. 53% of you said absolutely true. Requesting a waiver of an overpayment admits you were overpaid, but that it wasn't your fault that you were overpaid. And 47% of you said false. That's not what it means at all. Ray, take it away, buddy.
Well, you know, that's what it does mean. You know, and there are a couple of standards that you have to meet in order to get to that point. And we're going to discuss those in detail. As you can see on this slide now, there is no 60-day limit. So let's say the reconsideration that Ed was talking about took 7 months, and you finally get a decision that, yes, you're correct, your overpayment was not seven, it was $3,000. You still can file a waiver because there is no time limit. So you can wait for that reconsideration process to run. And that's a very important thing, because remember, Ed said while that reconsideration is pending, Social Security is not collecting any money. And look at the third bulletin. Why would you waive an amount that you don't actually owe? As Ed said, the government, Social Security, is a creditor right now. And if you owe Sears $50, you're going to pay them $50. But why would you pay them $75? You know, it's very, very important when we get into an overpayment situation that your first question is, do I really owe this much? Because getting rid of it can wait. You know, and once again, I'm going to echo Nicole. Call that hotline, because this is a lot of information, and it's going to naturally be confusing, and you're not going to be in a good place when you get this notice. Remember that there are people out there that can help you think through these steps. When you do request that waiver, it is because you agree with the amount and you agree that there was an overpayment. So remember that. We now agree that the overpayment is $3,000. The question then becomes, what do we do about it? And let's move to the next slide, Ed. Waiver of recovery says, I don't believe I should have to pay it back. And in order to secure a waiver, you need to meet a two-prong test. And you have to meet both parts. The first one is that you were not at fault in causing the overpayment. If you're at fault, stop. You are going to repay. If you are not at fault, then Social Security has to consider your ability to repay without risking your basic needs. So how much can you afford to repay while making sure food, clothing, and shelter needs are met? There is also this notion of against equity and good conscience. Now, that's a real tough thing, and it's a real honest-to-goodness legal concept. And before anyone starts screaming against equity and good conscience, I'm going to tell you, you've got to call the hotline. Yeah, because you need a professional opinion as to whether that's going to happen or not. We will discuss it, and I want you to know it's there, though. So the next slide, Ed. Now, the waiver form is not as simple as the reconsideration form. The reconsideration form, they've actually done studies to tell you that the reconsideration form can be filled out in 2 to 3 minutes. The waiver form is a bit longer, but you need to fill it out, and you need to think about it. You know, what I like to do is give that waiver form to my clients and ask them to fill it out first, then bring it to me, because there's a lot of information that you have access to that I don't. You know, so what we need to do is get you to complete these forms, bring them in, and we'll review them before we send them to Social Security. And the 1-800 number, again, can get you in contact with somebody who can help you with that.
That's now, right. And Ray,
yep.
I just wanted to let everybody know again that we are going to cover the waiver form, SSA 632BK. We are going to cover it question by question next Tuesday. We will send you an overpayment waiver form ahead of time, so you'll have it with you. And every question will also be on a slide. And we will cover them for you question by question.
Yep. Because once again, there are, you know, unlike Ed's last polling question, which was tricky, there are trick questions on that waiver form.
Absolutely.
Okay, now note this last bullet here. SSI beneficiaries are assumed to be unable to afford to repay. Now, when I say SSI beneficiaries, I mean somebody who receives any amount of SSI. So it's folks who receive SSI only and folks who receive SSDI along with a little bit of SSI. Every one of those people are considered to be an SSI beneficiary. So that if there are SSI benefits coming to you, you are assumed unable to afford, which means you don't need to complete the last 5 pages of the form, but you still need to prove that it wasn't your fault. Anybody who's getting SSDI only, it's a matter of the budget worksheets, and we'll talk about that next time. Next slide, Ed. Now, what do I mean when I say, was this your fault? You know, lots of people have lots of different opinions as to whose fault something might be. But the first thing I want to tell you is that it doesn't matter what I think. And it doesn't matter what Ed thinks. And it doesn't matter what Nicole thinks. The only people whose opinion matters here is Social Security's. They make the decision as to whether or not this was your fault or not. But what we can do is tell them what needs to be considered. You know, if the question is, did you report your work activity, and you say no, that Social Security will say, well, then it was your fault, so we're not going to waive this. But I've got to tell you, they need to consider other things. They need to consider the disability that's involved. They need to consider the person's age. What was that person's education? And did they understand the reporting requirements that come along with receiving benefits? You know, and I also like to mention that comprehension of reporting requirements also has to include, can the person read and understand English? Because if you get an English language notice and your first language is Vietnamese, it's not going to do you much good.
No comprendo.
So when you're evaluating somebody who did not report or are trying to put fault on somebody, I think we need to remind Social Security that, you know, look at all of this. Look at Ed Lopez as Ed Lopez, not just that he didn't report. Look at Nicole as Nicole. Look at Ray as Ray and consider the differences and their abilities and disabilities when you're making that fault determination.
Absolutely. And Ray, let me ask you a question here.
Sure.
That's come up from an audience member.
Uh-huh.
What if you have a rep payee and the rep payee was supposed to be reporting for you, but they didn't report? What can you do then?
Well, you know, you're talking to me. We're doing a webinar on one of my favorite Social Security subjects, and you're asking me questions about my second favorite. You know? So we could be here all day. Now, a rep payee basically steps into the foot, into the shoes of the beneficiary. So the rep payee has an obligation to report. The trick here is that even though there is a rep payee, the beneficiary still has an obligation to report. So you basically have two people who are responsible to report. Now, that being said, if you have a rep payee, somebody at Social Security has determined that you are not able to manage your own benefits. And if that decision has already been made, in my humble opinion, reporting is part of managing your benefits. So that how could you possibly be at fault if Social Security already said you don't have the ability to do that based on your disability, age, education, or comprehension? So I think that a rep payee situation removes the fault from
Absolutely.
The beneficiary.
And what we see in most cases where the person has a rep payee and yet Social Security is saying it was your fault, recipient, is that if they don't change their mind at the beginning when the individual requests a hearing, they win at the hearing level. So
yep.
My final comment to you on that very issue is that if you were to lose on that issue below, do not stop there and start paying it back. Request
yep.
a hearing, because there's a 99% chance you're going to win at the hearing.
Absolutely. You know, this is one of those situations where, you know, I don't want to give anybody a political lecture, but, you know, this is one of those situations where the government has sent you a bill. And just because it comes from the government does not mean it's right. You still have to watch your own back, because nobody else is going to watch it for you. And if somebody says no, remember that you are well within your rights to say, look again. You know, and that's very important. You don't want to give up that power that you have. Now, the ability to repay is the first part of that second test. Remember I said there was the ability to repay and there was that unfair against equity and good conscience. So we're going to talk about the ability to repay. Next slide, Ed. Now, remember I said SSI recipients, whoa, excuse those beagles in the background. Remember I said that
there
SSI...
There is no beagle in the background. This is like the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, pay no attention to those beagles. If there is an SSI, somebody who's receiving SSI, they cannot afford to repay. That's the rule. But notice what this says. It says SSI or other needs-based welfare benefits. So it's a little broader than what we already talked about. So we're going to add to the group of people who automatically can't afford to repay. And when we think of needs-based welfare benefits, what we need to think of is something that's like cash. So we're talking SNAP or food stamps. We're talking TANF. We're talking general assistance funds. Anything like that. If it's cash, You know, Section 8, nah, that's not going to work real well. But anything that's likened to cash, if you're receiving it on a needs-based basis, you will also fit into that category. So at this point, when we're telling Social Security about our ability to repay, we need to let them know where our income's coming from, because it's very, very important. The Title II folks, the SSDI folks, we have to look at the monthly budget figure. Now, Social Security sets forth what are ordinary and necessary living expenses. What Ed and I will do with you next week is talk about those expenses and figure out ways to make sure that you are getting every penny's worth of those expenses so that you're accounting of your monthly income as to what is going out is as accurate as possible. Next slide, Ed. The inability to repay again. There's a lot of stuff here, guys. If you are working with somebody, whether it's an advocate, whether it's an attorney, whether it's the helpline, and you decide, I have a check here and I'm not supposed to have it, or I got a direct deposit and it's not really mine, I know I'm being overpaid, and you set that money aside, when Social Security gets around to assessing the overpayment, that money goes back to Social Security. That money goes back. There is nothing you can do about that. If you have money that's readily identifiable as Social Security money, and they say you've been overpaid, all you do is hand those checks back, and they reduce the overpayment, or they may very well get rid of the overpayment completely. But there is nothing that can be done about that. So if people are setting money aside, you might get some free interest from the bank, and you can keep that part, but the rest of the money needs to be returned.
Absolutely, Ray. And Ray, another question just came up, and since we've been talking about repays a little bit, Meenakshi says, could you please shed some light on the criteria for the beneficiary to have a repay? What is the criteria for a person to have a repay, especially for beneficiaries that have a borderline mental retardation label?
Gee, Ed, thanks for that.
This is one of your favorite topics, buddy.
It is, you know, and I love this topic, but it's real hard to answer. It's real hard to answer. A repayee is a very, very general, has a very general standard. It's not that somebody is legally incompetent. It is basically, did somebody alert Social Security that this person might have trouble making sure their money goes to meet their basic needs? So it could be a parent of a disabled child. You know, by law, somebody under the age of 18 has to have a payee. If somebody is legally incompetent, you have to have a payee. But the 99% of the people who have payees are in the middle. And it might be me who goes to Social Security and says, you're about to give Ed SSI. You know, I'm Ed's older brother, and he's not going. He can't handle money. He's going to blow it. He's just going to give it away. He doesn't understand. That could be enough to have Social Security say, we need to have a repayee. So it's a very loosey-goosey standard.
Absolutely, Ray. And let me give you another example of when I have seen repayees recommended. An individual, I always say that the overpayment waiver issue has what I call one free bite. So in other words, if a person alleges that they did not understand the reporting requirements and Social Security grants them the waiver of that, then they can't allege that they did not understand the reporting requirements again 6 months later with a new overpayment. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, Social Security is going to say, well, we told you what the requirements were when we waived the overpayment last time. And the fact that you did not understand it might mean that you're not capable of reporting, managing your benefits, and thus we will waive your overpayment again. And I've seen this happen. If you agree to getting a rep payee, but if you say you don't want a rep payee, then you have to pay your overpayment. And that happens too.
Yep.
So keep that in mind, Meenakshi, as we go through. And Ray, it is time for our fourth polling question.
Uh-oh.
And this is, this is a good one.
Okay.
This is another good one. The question reads as follows. Even if it wasn't my fault, okay? It wasn't my fault, Ray.
It never is, Ed.
It never is. If I could afford, it's always your fault, Dave.
Yeah.
If I could afford to pay back the overpayment, I have to pay it back. If I, even though it wasn't my fault, if I have the money, to pay it back, I've got to pay it back. Simple as that. Let's do this in terms of Bill Gates. Bill Gates is getting disability benefits. Okay? Something happens and he's overpaid. It wasn't his fault that he was overpaid. But Social Security says to him, hey guy, waiver form, number one, not your fault. You met it. But number two, inability to pay. You've got $10 billion in the bank. You can afford to pay it back, so you have to pay it back. That's basically what the question asks. True or
false? And the answer,
false?
By the way.
Yeah. So what is going to happen here? Look at this. Look at the results here, Ray. The results show that 62% said absolutely true. If you've got the money to pay it back, even if it wasn't your fault, you've got to pay it back. But 38% said, no way. If it wasn't your fault, you don't have to pay it back. What's the answer and why?
Well, the answer, unfortunately, is if you have the ability to repay, you have to repay. Even
so Bill Gates
if
has to pay
it
back.
Absolutely. Okay. Remember, it was a two-pronged test. You have to meet both tests. I am not at fault, and I do not have the ability to repay.
In fact, I'm going to put that slide back up again one more time to show folks. Let's see. I had it up here before, and I want to make sure that I show it to them because I want people to understand. There it is, right there.
There it is. And beneficiary must be without fault, and the beneficiary must be unable to afford to repay. So if I am without fault but have $1 million in the bank, I need to repay.
Absolutely. And now we're going to move right ahead here. How about that?
How about that?
Okay.
All right, now take a look at this one. This one's going to be, is still my slide, Ed?
Yes, it is.
All right, good. I figured you'd shut me up when I needed to. Yeah. The right to a pre-recoupment hearing. Now notice that the slide says anybody who is seeking a waiver has the right to talk to Social Security before Social Security can start taking any money from you. Now, the right to an oral hearing means you have the right to go to the Social Security office to talk with the worker. You can do it by telephone, or if you live in a remote area, if you're up in Plattsburgh, you can do it by video conference. Now, all of those are opportunities for oral hearing. Do you have to go? Do you have to do this? No. Should you? Absolutely. What you get the chance to do is to sit down with the person who is about to tell you that this was your fault and listen as to why that person believes it's your fault, and then tell them why you think it's not your fault. It's a bite at the apple, and every time you have a chance to prove that you're correct, You take it. You can go to this hearing or do this telephone conference with an advocate, with a friend, anybody, with an attorney if you need to. Anybody that you want to can do this with you.
So I have a question from the audience here.
Sure.
Someone says, but what if the person was at fault? Should we still request that pre-recoupment hearing?
Well, what I want to ask is, how do you know they're at fault? You know, remember I said that Social Security's decision. Now, I've been doing this stuff, you know, it's 2012, so it's getting on 32 years that I've been, I know, that I've been dealing with these cases, and many, many of them have been overpayments. Only once in 32 years did I make a decision that my client was at fault. And why did I know that? Why was I sure? Because when I asked him if he reported his income, he said no. And when I asked him if he knew he was supposed to, he said yes. And I said, then why didn't you? He said, because I thought I'd take my benefits and keep my earnings as long as I possibly could. Now, at that point, I said, this was your fault. You know, there's nothing I can do for you. My best advice is to help you make a payment plan.
So, Ray, at that point then, you would say that the person should not be requesting an oral pre-recoupment hearing, correct?
I would say, yeah. Well, the person's not actually requesting this. Social Security is going to give you a notice saying, hey, you can have one of these. Now, if Social Security gives you a notice to say, Ed, come on in and talk to us, you can be assured that they're going to say, no, you cannot have a waiver. Because if they were going to say yes, they don't need to talk to you. Oral hearings only occur if Social Security is going to deny the waiver. So, you know, the first lesson here is, know that they're about to deny it and take advantage of the opportunity to talk with them about it. And the second lesson is, it's not our decision to make that fault determination for somebody else. Yeah, unless somebody just tells you, yes, it was my fault, I knew better. If they're that clear about it, then yeah, okay. Short of that, it's not my decision, it's Social Security's.
That's right. And once a person makes that admission to you, I think it is your job to say, really, we should not be requesting a waiver here. We should actually be you can actually meet.
Okay, Ed, you want to do that again? You were gone for a minute there.
Oh, see, it happens. Okay, here we go. So what I was saying was that if the individual admits to you that it was their fault, that they knew that they should have reported, and they deliberately did not report, what we should be saying to the individual is, we can't help you with a waiver of overpayment because it was your fault. But what we should be doing instead is looking at coming up with a repayment plan that is going to be okay for the individual, one that is not going to actually adversely affect them too much down the road, one that's low enough for the individual to make the payment without suffering too much.
Yeah.
And now, Ray, I get a chance to go again. And this is one of my favorite slides, because this is a slide that most people have never heard of. And look at what this slide says, because it will blow you away. If the overpayment is $1,001 or less, you hear that? $1,001 or less, and the waiver or appeal is requested, SSA can say, poof, gone. They can waive the overpayment because collection will impede efficient administration of the program. What that means is that to try to collect an overpayment, that's for $1,000.01 or less will cost them more money than it would to just waive it. The problem with this waiver is that Social Security never says to a consumer when they send a notice about a $600 overpayment that if you request a waiver, we will grant it automatically because of you don't want to impede efficient administration of the program. They just don't tell you, so you're supposed to know it. Now each and every one of you on this webinar knows it. So you should go spread the word. If someone says to you, I just got an overpayment, $750, and I'm going to start paying at $75 a month, you might want to say, why? Why aren't you requesting an administrative waiver? Because it will be granted. It's the way it works. But since people don't know about it, it's what happens. Now, we just had a person ask, what is the POMS? And at the first webinar that we did on SSDI, we explained that the POMS are the Policy Operating Manual Systems. They are the Bible to the Social Security claims representatives. They have it on the web. And what we've given you is the citation there, because if you are going to call a worker and the worker says, no, that's not true, what you do is you give them that POMS citation. POMS, SI-02260.030, and let them look it up. And when they see that it is in their Bible, they will apply it. Simple as that. They will apply it. So that's why we gave you the citation, because this is one of those issues that's really, really important for you to know. And for everybody in this webinar series to know about. Okay? Simple as that. Now let us go to polling question number 5. And Ray, this is a question that is going to see how much people know ahead of time, as opposed to how much have they learned from what we've said. The question reads as follows. If I offer to pay back SSA the amount of money over the resource limit, in other words, if I am $500 over the resource limit, SSI resource limit $2,000, but I have $2,500 in the bank, and I say, here, take $502, SSA will waive the remainder of the overpayment. True or false? This is one that we've not covered yet, but it's one which we really want people to know the answer to. And Ray, as I suspected, most people did not know this one, which is why we put this administrative waiver provision in our next slide. So it's always good to go through these materials to see who knows what, and because it helps us to prepare even for next time, to prepare our slides for next time. I'm going to close the poll and share the results. And you'll notice the results were almost split. 42% said that if you offer to pay back SSA the amount of money over the limit, SSA is going to waive the remainder of the overpayment. But over 50% of you said false. And Ray, the answer is that it is actually false, correct?
Yep.
Yep. And I'm going to take you to the next slide.
No, this wait a minute, Ed. The answer is actually true. They will waive the rest of it.
Oh, I'm sorry. The answer is actually true. That's what I meant to say. So most of you were incorrect, and which is, you know, why we do these slides. And look at this wonderful administrative waiver. And thank you, Ray, for correcting my gaffe there. At this administrative waiver provision, equity and good conscience exist to waive the remainder of any SSI overpayment resulting from excess resources once SSA has first recouped the amount of money over the resource limit. And let me give you the example that I gave you before once again. Ray Sabula has been receiving SSI for a while. He has been going in for his recertification reconciliation every year in January. Last January, when he went in, he had $1,999 in the bank. He was still under the resource limit. In January, he put in an extra $100. And then thereafter, he put in $30, $40 each and every month. So by the end of the year, he had $2,500 there. And in fact, from January through the end of the year, he had over $2,000, in fact, over $2,100. Social Security sends him a notice that says, "Dear Ray, we want to inform you that for all of 2011, you were over the resource limit. You have been getting in 2011, because you live alone, $761 in SSI. When we multiply that by 12, that's about $9,000. Here's a self-addressed stamped envelope. Please send us $9,000 at your earliest convenience." Of course, Ray freaks out. He says to you, "How is it possible that when all I was $500 over the resource limit, Social Security expects me to pay back $9,000? And that's when you say, "Not so fast." Ray, if we call Social Security and we offer to give them $505, it will do away with the overpayment for the whole period. And Ray says, "Well, why didn't they tell me that?"
Because they don't know.
Because they often don't know themselves. And so, Judy, remember when you asked me before, what's the POMS? Once again, there's the POMS, the Bible, Policy Operating Manual Systems. That's where you find it.
Yeah, and I think we have to also explain that the POMS, you know, when you and I were baby lawyers, you know, the POMS were in paper format. There are hundreds of thousands of rules. You know, and the POMS really can fill up an entire room of bookshelves. So there are so many rules that everybody needs to know about when you're dealing with this. It's not unusual for somebody at Social Security not to know them all. That's why we're giving you the sites and letting you know that if you play around on socialsecurity.gov, you can find the POMS yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ray, and we have a question here that's a very good question. It says, you're speaking about an SSI beneficiary, right? And of course, that's correct. If you look at slide 23, it says they're SSI. Okay, when the beneficiary pays back the amount over the resource limit, what happens to the Medicaid? Does it continue without problem for the same time period? Okay, and here's the answer. Very, it's a great question. But remember what I said to you before. I said to you that the SSI resource limit is woefully low. And in fact, the Medicaid resource limit is $13,800. If this individual were to be told that they were not eligible for SSI, they would then get a notice saying, "You're not eligible for automatic Medicaid, but come in to see, because of your SSI, whether you would be eligible for Medicaid under our guidelines." And the answer would then be that he would be, because he would be considered disabled. And lo and behold, his resource limit would be under the New York State Medicaid resource limit, which is $13,800. That was a great question.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in reality, the way these overpayments are assessed, we're always looking at things historically. So we're not looking at what's happening in March. We're looking at what happened last March. And when overpayments are assessed, Social Security says something was wrong with your case about a year ago or 2 years ago. And at that point, you know, if you're currently eligible, there's really not going to be any impact on your Medicaid whatsoever.
Absolutely. Right.
Can there be? Yeah. Have I ever seen that? I have never experienced that in my entire career. So for the most part, you don't need to worry about that.
Absolutely. And Ray, remember that, I should say April, remember how I began my example? I said that for all of 2011, they were over, and it wasn't until the person went in for their recertification reconciliation in 2012 that they found out. And that's exactly what Ray was just explaining to you, that it's always done, you know, after the fact. They don't do it right away. Now, our last few slides are going to be covered. And look, we all would like to say that we are going to win our overpayment cases, but sometimes we don't. And the question is, what happens once we get an unfavorable final decision? And basically, the answer is, it's got to be paid back. And so there's going to be recovery by adjusting the ongoing benefits. And the question is, by how much? So first, let's look at SSI beneficiaries. With an SSI beneficiary, if it was their fault, they've got to pay it back. So, how does Social Security do it? They basically say, look, we are going to adjust your ongoing SSI by 10% of your monthly income. If the person is only getting SSI and is not working, then we're talking about 10% of $76.10 in 2011. In 2012, it's $7.85, 10% of $78.50. That's how it works. But the individual can say, my goodness, I could not meet my needs if you took away all 10%. And so Social Security has actually said that the individual can actually request less than 10%. And often, without much prodding, they will say 5% is absolutely okay. 5% is absolutely okay. Now, let me just tell you that both Ray and I have had Social Security workers agree, in fact, and this is very important, agree to payment amounts that were woefully low. I had a worker agree to, on $1,000+ back then, overpayment, agreed to getting the money back $1 a month from an 81-year-old lady. Now think about that. She would have to live to be 500 years old to pay it back. So that's the way it works. Now, I wanted to let everybody know, and thank you, Anthony, for reminding me, that the Medicaid resource limit, in fact, for 2012, the figures just came out a little while ago, is $14,250. It was $13,800 in 2011, but it is $14,250. So thank you, Anthony, for reminding me of that. And then there's also another question that just came in from Angela, and she says, going back to paying the dollar amount over the resource limit, will SSA create a payment plan, or does it have to be paid in one lump sum? And the answer is simple. If the individual has the money, and that's the issue, then it should be paid in one lump sum, because that's what's going to bring the person below the resource limit.
Yeah, and Ed, I think it's important to remember that if you have $2,500 in the bank, there's no need for a payment plan. You can just write a check for $502 and you're below the resource limit. This is not money that needs to be budgeted. It's there.
Absolutely, Ray. Absolutely. Now, what if the person is not an SSI beneficiary? What if they are an SSDI beneficiary? Well, then there's no 10% limitation at all. So what happens is, and I'm going to tell you what happens, a lot of times the Social Security worker will say, well, gee, you can pay it back by giving us your whole check for the next 10 months. You owe $8,000, $800 a month. And the person says, how am I going to live? And then the worker says, well, what do you want to pay back? And then we start playing, let's make a deal. And what the golden rule is as follows. Social Security likes to see repayment of an overpayment within 36 months. But it's just the golden rule. And exceptions, I mean, rules are made to be broken. There's always an exception to every rule. And so the bottom line is that as a person who's calling Social Security, what you have to be able to say to them is, look, the only way that I can make all my ends meet is if I pay you X amount each and every month. If not, I'm going to get into financial trouble out there. And Social Security is actually, for the most part, the workers are pretty good about listening to individuals when they say that. Now, let's look at a very, very biggie, cross-program recoupment. What that means is if you've got a person who gets both SSDI and SSI, you get both SSDI and SSI, okay, what happens? Well, they can recover one from the other. But if the beneficiary receives some SSI, they're considered an SSI recipient. So that then a 10% recoupment rate will apply. In other words, they can't say we're going to take your whole check. They can take 10% of the total monthly amount being received. And that is it. And Ray, we're going to cover our last polling question right now. And this is one of the fun ones, and it's going to see whether everybody's been listening. SSA cannot recover an SSI overpayment from an SSDI payment. True or false? And look at the slide that's up there now. It says cross-program recoupment is now an option in all overpayment cases. Okay? Look at that slide as you answer these questions. And the question is, true or false, SSA cannot recover an SSI overpayment from an SSDI payment. True or false? And we're up to, oh my goodness, we have 8 seconds left and we've got 80% of you voting again. Absolutely wonderful to see that high voting rate, guys. Absolutely wonderful. I'm going to close the poll and show the results. 29% of you said it's true. They can't recover an SSI overpayment from your SSDI payment. And 71% of you said, look at the slide. Of course they can. It is now an option in all overpayment cases. Ray, what's the answer?
Well, Ed, you just said, look at the slide.
Oh, was I sarcastic there? Sorry.
Yes, okay. You were.
All right. So remember, very, 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 very important that you see that. Now, let's go on to, oh, my goodness gracious. The next slide. This is very important. If the individual is found by Social Security to have willfully misrepresented or concealed material information, in other words, they lied, cheated, and stole, okay? There was some fraud involved. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be a 10% limit on recovery, even if they're on SSI. They're going to say, you lied, you cheated, you stole, and we want more money back now. Or we may be referring this case to the Department of Justice, and they're going to come by and take you away in handcuffs. It is the way it works. So you should just know about that. Finally, what are some other ways for them to take your money? Oh my goodness. If you had an overpayment and you've not paid it back and you've not requested a waiver or any of that stuff, and then you go off the benefits at some point and you go to work and you file taxes and you have a refund coming to you, they can take your refund. Now, they're supposed to give notice ahead of time. You're supposed to have the option to request the overpayment waiver or reconsideration at that point. But of course, you can't request reconsideration at that point because the 60 days have passed. But you can request a waiver. And if you do, it should stop the seizure. But they can do it if no action has been taken. They can take your wages. They can garnish your wages at 15% of your wages. The same applies. They've got to give you notice beforehand and give you a chance to request a waiver if you never did it before. But if you've lost, that's the story. You can offer a lump sum settlement. Let's say you owe $5,000, but a family member says, my God, if Ray has to deal with this overpayment amount, he's going to have a nervous breakdown. Can we go into Social Security and offer them $2,500? So you go in and you say, look, Mom, my mom and dad are here. They would like to pay it for me, $2,500. That's what they can afford. Oftentimes, Social Security will say fine because they get bonus points for collecting, for recouping, and they've recouped something. And so they will often say yes. It depends on the worker, but they will often say yes. Keep that in mind. And then, of course, this is a biggie. Let's say the person was deemed at some point to have not been at fault, but they had the money, and now they don't have the money anymore. The circumstances has changed. Then lo and behold, they can file a second waiver saying, my circumstances, woo, Ray, that is a tongue twister. My circumstances have changed, and thus I can no longer afford to pay this back. And I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen, in fact, on more than one occasion. Now, before we go, I've got one question I want to cover, and I also have the hotline up here for you. If you have a question about overpayments and you need a quick response, call the toll-free hotline, 1-888-224-3272. You'll be talking to either Jessica Abbott or one of two other folks at the Neighborhood Legal Services office. They are so in touch with the overpayments, with passes, with the Medicaid buy-in program, all the topics that we've discussed, with the work incentives, and they'll be able to answer your question. Now we've got one question from the audience here, and it goes as follows. It says, sorry to go backwards. No need to apologize, Anthony, but for the administrative waiver, $1,000.01 or under, is there a special form to fill out or just the regular waiver form? Well, Anthony, let me just tell you, in some cases, it is enough just to make the call and say waiver or to send a letter to say we request the administrative waiver. In other situations, depending on the worker may say, why don't you fill out the waiver form, the first few pages, and we will, you know, waive it for you. It all depends. I prefer to not have to fill out that waiver form. I prefer just to be able to make that call and say, administratively waive, can I send you a letter about that? And often they'll say yes. But it doesn't always happen that way. You know, to quote our good friend Connie Farrell, she always says, how lucky do you feel? And it all depends on the luck of the draw. Simple as that. Great question, always. Great question. And Ramon, it is now 11:30. It is time to bid everybody adieu. Say goodbye, Ray.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
See you next week when we cover the waiver of overpayment form, question by question. And are your doggies saying goodbye, too?
They're quietly looking out the window right now.
Perfect. Okay, guys, have a wonderful week. Please come back next Tuesday for the final webinar in this six-part series. Take care.